Hi, I'm Holly.
And I'm Haley.
Welcome to Mountain Mysteries, Tales from Appalachia.
Hi.
Feels like we just met in a bar or something.
Hi.
Oh, hi. Would you like a drink?
I might have one already, thanks.
Oh, wow. That feels so like here you encouraged me and said hi, and then when I offered you the drink, you're like, I already have one. Thanks. That felt like you put a wall up quickly.
Yeah, it did.
I don't think this relationship's going to work.
Okay. I'll go there.
This mirrors your text messaging. You will text message me something. I reply to you. And nothing. It's just like dead.
Died.
It's like, what is happening?
Yeah, no, I'm a really bad texter.
Oh, she's terrible at that.
I am.
That is not everything. Even if she initiates it.
Yeah, it's just... Here's the problem. Is, like, I'll text somebody and then... read what they've responded to, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'll respond to that in a minute.
Shouldn't respond.
It just doesn't happen.
So if there's an emergency and I'm like, Haley, I actively need your help, please help me.
You better call me.
You're just not going to respond.
Yeah, you better call, because sometimes that text message isn't opened for hours.
And by that point, I have passed.
Yeah, Holly's passed on.
Yes. So sad. Too bad. Haley didn't read that text. She could have saved a life tonight.
Yeah, if I'd only read my text.
That's all right. It's okay.
You know, some people are good at things and others are not.
It's just so funny. You're good at many other things. I actually was thinking about, so my son's getting ready to have his birthday, and mm-hmm. I was thinking about when he was born. It was so sweet. Haley came to the hospital, and mm-hmm. she held him, cute little pictures, and then we were home from the hospital about a week.
Yeah.
And you and another friend of mm-hmm. ours came over, and Haley was like, I got a couple things for the baby, you know? And I was like, oh, great. It wasn't a couple things.
No.
She got all these diapers and all these little outfits, and it was so cute. And I was like, oh my gosh. It was so extra. Yeah. It was amazing. And we still have all of the clothes.
Aww.
And she had a little St. Patrick's Day shirt Lucky Lad.
Yeah.
It was so cute.
It was so tiny.
She had a little,
everything that was in that.
It was a cute little animal, and it was like hanging on. It was really cute. It was, I can't remember what type of animal.
And a lot of that was like my mother.
It was
as well,
so
like,
cute.
Yeah.
I know. Everybody was so excited. Yeah. I was excited too, but I was also barely functional.
Yeah.
Very. I was so freaking tired.
Yeah. Overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Tired.
Overwhelmed, tired, all the things. But yeah, there's this picture of Haley holding my son when she came, and he looked so mm-hmm. tiny, like just so little. And I think you just kind of forget it's that perspective of like how little they actually
are. I think
it's
like I have like one hand on him, like halfway up my chest, and he's just like
snuggled in
asleep.
It's so tiny, little feet
so
underneath
little.
Him, like just itty bitty. And I have a picture of her holding him on her birthday,
mm-hmm.
A little over a year later, and he's like ginormous.
Yeah.
And same way, he's yeah. fallen asleep on you, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
So much bigger. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a little guy, though.
He was so tight. He was about 3 weeks early.
Yeah.
So
he was a little guy.
He's, you know, like 6 poundish, but he was a little bit of a surprise.
Coming into the hospital, it was like right as COVID was kind of start, like we didn't know a whole lot
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, and they were getting stricter on who could come in.
They were. We still weren't in masks.
Not yet.
We weren't in masks, and they were like, you know, kind of weird about who could come in.
They
and
said
like
it had to be family.
Yeah.
So
I was your sister for a minute.
But I had a lot of people who ended up being my mm-hmm. sister. So I myself don't have any sisters. But every time, like, I knew you guys were coming, I would be like, oh, so another one of my sisters is coming. And they mm-hmm. were probably like,
My sisters, are y'all Mormon? Like, what's happening?
Well, and it was so funny because my sisters all looked very different. One mm-hmm. was a brunette with glasses. Mm-hmm. One was a really tall blonde. One was a redhead. Mm-hmm. You know, the other were married to each other.
Yeah, they were married to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
That one was the one that I think really got them.
There was some confusion there.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, you know. Yeah. We're a very open family. Yeah. We marry each other yeah. in the South.
We marry each other. We marry each other.
Don't worry about it. Don't ask questions. It's fine. So when my mother eventually came to visit, she got some dirty looks, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, she's kind of the whore.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it was funny because I remember getting to the hospital and like you said, you know, 3 weeks early, it was kind of a surprise yeah. and like, whoa. So, you know, we didn't know, like a lot of us, we didn't know what name you had picked
right.
yet. So, because that was kind of like
wild. I didn't know if he was a boy or a girl.
Right. Yeah. We didn't know. It was just so much was going on. So I remember getting to the hospital and I hadn't asked.
Oh, yeah.
For his, like, I had your name and they're like, oh, who are you here to see? And I like, I gave him your name and they're like, oh, what's baby's name? And I was like,
Holly's baby.
And they looked at me like I was weird. And I was like, listen, there's a lot going on.
Like, are we, like, you know.
I don't yeah. really know. And they were like.
Is this dad's name?
Okay. Last name? So they like walked away for a minute and then they yeah. let me come back. And I was like, I'm not going to get to go back now.
They were strip searching her. They were like rubbing her down. Yeah. Like, her down.
I don't know.
All she had to say was, I'm Holly's sister. Bam.
I know. Would have gotten in.
Door open.
I was like, I don't actually know. It's like, I don't know my nephew's name. Sorry.
Well, I actually didn't either. I mean, you know, trying to figure out. I had in my head so many girl names. It was mm-hmm. ridiculous.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. If this is a girl, bam, this is it. Not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Boy names are hard.
They are. Well, my little brother, I know my parents had a hard time with his name. Like, I think he was baby boy, their last name, for yeah. like a good minute.
Was he really?
Mm-hmm.
I thought they had a name picked out.
They did. They had picked one name out, and then both my parents are paramedics.
Yeah.
And my mom worked a fatality of a kid who had that name that she had picked out. And so that she didn't keep that
makes
name.
Sense.
So then she was like, I can't use that name now because now all I'm going to see is this other parent's deceased child. Like, really bad accident.
Well, and yeah, as having been a teacher and,
yeah.
you know, as a therapist working with kids, I really noticed that in my classroom, those boys with those like hardcore biblical names were hell on wheels.
The worst.
And please, I, you know, I don't mean to, be disrespectful if you have a really solid biblical name. But those like Zacharies and Jeremiah's
and now
Jacob's
it's like-
were like, awful.
The Zaydens and the Bradens and the Aidens and the Cadens. Mm-hmm. I have a multitude of those. They're great kids. I love them.
Aiden.
But they are hell on wheels.
Yes.
Like, I love those kids. Some of my favorite kids in the building have those names. But I'm like, oh my God.
I know. It's insane.
They're wild.
So in picking like my son's name, I was like, I can't do this like giant biblical name.
Yeah.
So well, yeah, so Zachariah was out.
Well, the name you picked was great.
I love it.
It's very fitting.
I love it. Yeah.
Yep.
He looks like his name.
Yeah.
I think he does.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. Good job, Holly.
Yay. All right. So let's get into talking about somebody with kind of a unique name.
Oh.
Velma Margie Barfield.
Velma. You know, I can't say I know any Velmas.
I can't either. The only one I know is from Scooby-Doo.
It just strikes me as such an old name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So, we're going to talk about her because she made international headlines.
Uh-oh, what'd she do?
She became the first woman to be executed in America since 1962.
How?
And first since the reintroduction of the death penalty in 1976. She was also the first woman to be executed by lethal injection.
Which is seemingly more a humane way to die.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was put to death at 2 a.m. on the 2nd of November in 1984 at the Central Prison in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Oh.
She was a somewhat plump 52-year-old grandmother.
Somewhat plump.
Who had murdered 4 people.
Oh. That's not cool, Granny.
Yeah.
Why? Why? Wait a minute. She was a 52-year-old grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, people had kids young back then. Okay.
Velma was addicted to drugs. prescription drugs, such as tranquilizers, sleeping pills, antidepressants, and barbiturates.
You know, first of all, my image of a granny, when you say her name and all the things, I think 80-year-old, gray-haired, all the stuff. Nah. So that's first what I pictured, and then you told me she
was 52. You pictured my granny.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, you know, a little different. And then you said she was 52, and I'm like, good Lord, I'll be 52 in like a decade. Like, it's not, it's coming soon. Yeah,
like, my mom will be 50 this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's coming soon. So that doesn't make sense. And then she's addicted to drugs.
Yeah.
I mean, prescription nonetheless, but drugs.
But still drugs. Her addiction actually stemmed from a nervous breakdown.
Mm.
And she had a history of overdosing and subsequent hospital treatments with 4 admissions between 1972 and 1975.
So we're struggling with some mental health
stuff. Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay, well, let's get into who she was.
Okay, let's do it. Yeah.
Woo. Okay, so she was born on the 23rd of October, 1932, in North Carolina, near the Raleigh area. She was the oldest girl and the second of a large family of 9 children.
Hmm.
So she's number 2. So there's a boy ahead of her. Yeah, first girl. She claimed her father had beat and sexually assaulted her and her sisters, although this was disputed by many other relatives. So I don't know if that's 100% accurate, but it could be. I mean, you never know.
Well, sometimes you have relatives who are protecting the family.
They do.
And the image. So.
Absolutely. She dropped out of school, and by age 19, she had 2 children.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did have them young. Mm-hmm.
She had a son named Ron and a daughter named Kim by her first husband, Thomas.
Okay.
So, to begin with, their marriage was happy, and they seemed like a pretty normal family unit. All of that, though, began to deteriorate when Thomas suffered head injuries in a car crash in 1966, and became unable to work. Velma got a job in a store to make ends meet and support the family. So she had been kind of the stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
He gets in a car crash.
She has to go to work.
She has to go to work.
So there's some, you know, not outward towards him, but in a way there's some resentment, mm-hmm. too, that's building, because now her whole world is pretty shaken up.
I mean, everything's changing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Thomas rapidly became an alcoholic, and Velma began to take antidepressants and tranquilizers to get her through the daily stress of what was becoming a pretty miserable life.
Yeah.
Ultimately, she had a breakdown and became addicted to the various drugs. Mm. So she, you know, was really, really struggling.
Yeah.
In 1969, Thomas actually died in a house fire.
Oh.
Which may or may not have been an accident. It's not really been proven.
So is it, we're kind of leaning up here that she was kind of pushed to the edge.
Yeah.
And she was like, we got to get rid of Tom.
Yeah.
Because I'm just kind of done with this.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Not a good idea, Velma.
Not great.
No.
Not great.
No. Get a divorce.
Yeah. So that's not, you know, totally been proven. Velma remarried in 1970 to Jennings Barfield.
So the next year.
Mm-hmm. He was dead within 6 months.
Oh, that didn't go well.
Wow. Cause of death was arsenic poisoning.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So Velma's limited employment at the store and some other employment opportunities that she had, could not really support her drug habit.
Yeah, I couldn't see that.
Yeah, so she took to forging checks.
Wonderful.
And then killing the people she had defrauded.
Well,
that escalated quickly.
Yeah, it did. I mean, at least they find out about it, so you better off them too. And honestly, right. Why stop now?
Right.
I mean, if you can kill someone as close to you as your spouse, why not just take out a random person whose check you've stolen?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're going to get into some more crimes.
Oh, God, there's more.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh. In 1977, she was in a relationship with Stuart Taylor, who was a widower and a tobacco farmer. You know, she was forging checks in his name from, you know, his account to pay for her addiction.
Right.
So she's doing this. The theory is that Taylor began to get suspicious because, you know, fearing that she had been found out, Velma mixed an arsenic-based rat poison into his beer and tea. Taylor became very ill, and Velma volunteered to nurse him back to health.
More back to the grave.
As his condition worsened, she took him to the hospital, where he died a few days later.
Hmm.
Unfortunately for her, there was an autopsy, which found that the cause of Taylor's death was arsenic poisoning, and Velma was arrested and charged with his murder. At the trial, her defense pleaded insanity, but this was not accepted, and she was convicted.
Yeah.
The jury recommended the death sentence. Velma appeared very cold and uncaring on the stand and actually gave the district attorney a round of applause when he made his closing speech.
Oh my gosh.
So, a lot going on with her. She subsequently confessed to the murders of her own mother in 1974, and in whose name she had taken out a loan.
Ah, yeah.
And two elderly people, John Henry Lee, by whom she was being paid as a housekeeper and carer, and Dolly Edwards, through she met through Stuart Taylor.
Okay.
So in grand total, she's killed Stuart, Dolly, her mother, and John Henry Lee.
That we can prove.
That we can prove. Because we also have the other husband.
Right.
Jennings Barfield, who died from arsenic poisoning. And the guy who died in the fire.
Yeah. Thomas.
Thomas. So.
Six.
Could potentially be six.
Huh.
We got four confirmed. All right. Wow. So, let's talk about her time on death row.
Okay.
On death row in Raleigh, Velma, who was now off drugs, expressed remorse for the years that the pills had blurred her judgment and destroyed her moral compass. However, she could not really explain why she had killed.
Crack is whack, Grandma.
Crack is whack.
Straight up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Straight up.
She became a born-again Christian while awaiting trial, and during the next 6 years that she spent on death row, she actually did a lot to help and counsel other female inmates. Appeals to save her dragged on through various courts, and there were many representations on her behalf by religious leaders, so she really, like, seemed to be really into the Christian faith.
Either was just a really good actress,
right,
or
had found
God and changed her life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, either seems possible.
Well, I mean, when you know that your time is coming very, very soon, mm-hmm. I think that you have a need to make it right with God. Right. A lot of people do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Her final appeal was filed on October 30th, 1984 in the North Carolina Supreme Court on the grounds that she was incompetent at her original trial by virtue of her drug addiction. This was rejected by the court, though. There have been many appeals on her behalf. The Supreme Court was having had rejected them on three different occasions.
Mm.
So, the governor of North Carolina, James B. Hunt, declined to grant clemency and was unimpressed by her religious conversion and good behavior on death row. So it was claimed by Hunt, by some, that Hunt, who was the governor at the time, could not reprieve her without looking, quote, soft on crime during the run-up to the state elections in 1984.
Just like soft on crime.
Bad, like, reasoning to not save someone's life, but, you know, whatever.
I'm going to prove it to them. I'm going to let that old lady die.
Yeah.
Gosh. Yeah.
So
I'm not a softy. Tried to give me milk and cookies. Well, guess what, Grandma? Electric chair. Or no, lethal injection.
Lethal injection, yeah. So she really began at this point to accept her death, you know, that she was going to die.
Right, right.
And instructed her attorney, Jimmy Little, to drop all appeals the day before she was due to be executed, saying that she wanted to, quote, die with dignity. She had little fear of what lay ahead and is quoted as saying, when I go into that chamber at 2 a.m., it's my gateway to heaven.
Wow.
So she really, it sounds like, felt like, you know, she had found God and found forgiveness and, you know.
She was ready.
Repented and found salvation and, like, all of that stuff. So, and, you know, maybe. Yeah. Maybe that's good for her. Okay. So her execution, we're going to talk about that, which is kind of sad and, like, a lot. Under North Carolina law, she was allowed the choice of execution by lethal gas or lethal injection, and she chose lethal injection, which, yeah.
I would, too.
She could not face having a last meal, and just asked a guard to get her Coca-Cola and cheese duties.
What are cheese duties?
Cheese doodles, cheese duties, cheese doodles. They're like, it's like a little cracker. Like
Cheetos?
Kind of like Cheetos.
Okay.
So she just asked for that. Wow. She just didn't want, you know. She dressed in her own pink pajamas for the execution and was made to wear, Depends, like a diaper type thing.
Yeah, because you measure yourself.
Yeah, usually release everything. A stethoscope and heart monitor were taped to her chest. They wheeled the gurney. The wheeled gurney was taken to her cell, and she was secured to it with straps over her body and legs. IVs were inserted into her arms, and a saline drip started before she was wheeled into the execution chambers a few minutes before 2 a.m. Three syringes were attached to each IV line, and those were operated by three volunteers, because you can't be paid for that job.
I did not know
that. It's apparently a thing. It's a volunteer thing.
So you would have, like, a nurse or a CNA or somebody
that volunteers who could their time.
Volunteer and do that.
Yeah, wow. You don't do... I guess it's probably, like, I'm sure there's a lot of, like, sticky stuff with, you know, paying somebody to do that, and then there being, like, oh, we're gonna have these people executed to pay these people to do this. Like, it just, I don't know.
I guess so, but you're paying the rest of the staff.
Yeah. I think everybody involved in that execution is a volunteer. Like, nobody's paid for their time.
Really?
I'm 90% sure.
We're going to look that up. That's interesting.
But yeah, okay. I know these people were volunteers that had done this. Okay. Yeah. One of the IV lines was a dummy line so that none of the volunteers could be sure if they had actually been the ones.
That's good, because then you don't have the guilt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was pronounced dead at 2:15 a.m. The execution, you know, went off without any complications. At 2:25 a.m., her body was taken away by a waiting ambulance past the crowds of pro and anti-capital punishment demonstrators who had assembled outside the prison. She had requested that her organs be used for transplant purposes, which is why they moved her so quickly.
Yeah.
However, this was not possible, as her heart had not been beating for 10 minutes. So if your heart stops and they can get it back to beating either through, you know, CPR or life support or something, they can usually harvest organs. But hers had been, she'd been down for 10 minutes and that her heart could not be restarted. Although there were many attempts made to do that by the transplant team. However, they were able to use her cornea, so part of her eye, and some skin tissue.
That's great.
So they were able to take some of that to be part of the donation process. So... the big question in all this is, you know, was she, you know, a monster and a serial killer, Or was she just someone whose brain was so messed up by drugs and needed money to pay for them and, you know, made these choices that she wouldn't have otherwise made if not for drugs? I mean, but then I guess, you know, the drug use was a choice to begin with.
Yeah.
You know?
But I mean, yes, it was a choice to get into it, but then once you're into it, you can't easily get out. It's not like, you know what, I'm going to put my heroin down.
I'm going to quit cold turkey. Stop. Yeah, that's hard.
I think people very rarely do that. And I think for people who are, who've never been drug users, and I've never been a drug user either, but I think that, you know, I've seen people who have had drug addictions. It's easier said than done. Like, so many people around them are like, just stop doing it. Well, it's like, just stop breathing too. Right. Like, it becomes part of your norm. And when you are addicted to something, you need more and more and more of it. So yeah, she couldn't just stop and just say, you know what, I'm going to stop now. She needed more and more of it. And when you're that desperate, you will do anything.
Yeah.
And so in this case, she was offing people, and I don't know. She didn't have a history of it before.
Right.
Like, before the drug use, she didn't have a history of it. So it very well could be attributed to that. But I also think murder is pretty hardcore. I mean, you know, stealing the checks, that makes complete sense. Like, stealing someone's jewelry to pawn to go buy drugs, that's complete sense. But killing is... That's a big choice.
Poisoning, that's not an easy...
And that's premeditated.
Yeah.
I could see it if it's like, you're not giving me what you want, I want, and, you know, killing somebody. But, like, this was very premeditated.
Oh, for sure.
So then it leads you to have some questions about, okay, so if she was in her right mind enough to do this premeditated murder and multiple murders.
Yeah.
And if she had to make it so right with God.
Yeah.
It also said that there was a lot of guilt going on and a lot of shame going on. So I don't know.
I don't think I could ever, you know, I don't know how I 100% feel about the death penalty, but I don't think I could ever be the person on a jury or a judge or anywhere near that and make a decision like that.
No, I don't either.
Like, if I ever get called for jury duty and it's a capital case, like, I'll be dismissed because... I won't be able to do it.
I had gone for one, and it was a domestic violence case, and I was the alternate 13, and they had me come up, and you know, they ask you a plethora of questions, blah blah blah, and the last question was one of the last questions was, what do you do for a living? And I said, I'm a therapist. And they said, have you ever worked in DV cases, domestic violence cases? And I said, yes. And they instantly, the defense was like, that's a bias, send her out. And I was like, hot damn, I get to leave.
Yeah.
And even though it was a DV case and it wasn't like a big capital case or anything like that, I wanted out.
Yeah.
Like, I still felt like, ugh, you know. So I got my $12. Yep. I found my car and I went home.
Yeah. Parking validated.
Parking was validated where... You know, parking is very expensive, so I was happy about that. I mean, got my $12. Didn't work that day, but I did get my $12.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. Ate at a really good Indian food restaurant.
Nice. Yeah. No, knock on wood, I have not been called for jury duty.
Really?
Yeah. My brother, I think, has been called at least once, maybe twice.
Yeah, I've been called twice, and I had to go once because the first time they were like, oh no, juror number 1257 all dismissed. So I was like, hot diggity.
Yeah My mom actually had to go through the whole, she was selected for the jury.
Wow.
And it was like
a week-long
trial, and so she had to sit on the jury.
Wow.
For this case. So
she would be really good.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
She has such clarity and, like, you know, just handles herself really well and, like, has good, I don't know.
Yeah.
She'd just be really good at it.
I was like, better you than me, dude. Good luck.
I know.
Yeah, so she had to do that whole trial, and everything. But she's had to testify before, you know, as a paramedic and stuff like that. So she's been, you know.
We've been in court.
Yeah, we have court pants. We do have court pants.
We used to have a running joke all the time. Yeah. I was actually just telling, talking to my mother about an audit that we went through and how we, our boss was like, well, get out your court pants because you're going to be interviewed in this audit.
Yeah, we had to wear our court pants.
No, Haley came in a dress.
I did. I had on a cute little
had a cute little like red dress.
Mm-hmm. It was like a little sweater dress type thing.
Yeah. It was super cute. Yeah. And I was like, you're wearing a dress? Wow. You really stepped it up.
I know. More than my jeans and my ratty t-shirt.
No, you really did. I was like, wow, I'm so impressed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, our court pants, I actually kept a pair of dress pants in our director's filing drawer. Mm-hmm. She had, in her office, she had this big filing cabinet. The bottom drawer had, I think, my court pants. I think both of the guys that worked in our office had court pants in there. There were several people who kept their court pants in there.
You had to have court pants because you never knew.
You never knew. And most of the time, like, we were all wearing, like, a decent enough shirt we could go to court in.
Yeah.
But I wore jeans a lot.
Yeah.
Because in the work that we did, like, I was with kids all the time. Like, I'm running around. I'm with kids. I'm, like, doing things. I'm hopping over to meetings. Like,
yep.
I don't care what I look like. so I'd be in, like... I mean, I usually wear, like, black jeans or, like, really dark wash jeans or something like that. And, like, a nice, like, it was pretty, it was casual, but it was, like, professional.
I never,
casual.
Ever thought you looked
frumpy
at all. Yeah.
So, usually had on a shirt that I could wear if I got called to court, but I never was wearing court pants.
And typically, too, you know, it would be, like, you've been served. And there's your subpoena, you know. So you kind of knew ahead of time, but not always.
Not always. I mean,
sometimes there would be situations where they were like, you know.
We want to speak to the case manager. We want to speak to, you know, whatever. Like, it was a lot. We weren't the ones that were typically in court, but like sometimes like you never knew.
Yep.
Or like if there was a kid that was on my caseload that was going into court and I had to take them to court, like you still have to look
decent,
like especially some of those judges are real strict.
They are really strict. There's a there's one judge that I know of because you know I have been to court a few times. Not for crimes,
right?
Just to clarify, as a professional, you know, for a client. Anyway, but there was one who was like, okay, had the bailiff come out and say, if any woman is dressed inappropriately, if any man does not have his shirt tucked in and his pants pulled up, you can just get out now. Seriously.
Dang.
And I was like, whoa. And so quickly I'm like checking myself and make sure the boobs are in and
like everybody's all the things, like put together
in and all so.
Well, there's one judge who was very strict about blazers.
Really?
You had to wear a blazer. And so I remember being in that hallway at one point. I didn't have to go into court, but I was down through there, and it was when all of the family court cases were being heard, so there's just a line of social workers like down the hall, and everyone was passing a blazer back and forth.
Oh my gosh, that's so
like,
funny.
Like someone who didn't have a blazer, like somebody later down the line would like pass their blazer up.
You're a large, here you go. I'm here a medium. Okay,
we'll make it work.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. Just suck in a little bit. Yeah. Yep.
So
I used
they
to wear
all,
blazers all the time.
Yeah, they all kept their blazers in their offices. Because they were usually wearing court pants all the time, whereas we were not fancy enough for blazers. We just kept our court pants in a drawer.
I was not used to that, because where I had come from before, I always wore blazers.
Mm-hmm.
and one of my colleagues who ended up becoming a good friend of mine, because I have that pattern, she would always wear heels. And I remember, it was so funny, I told her recently, I was like, remember... Like, I wore blazers all the time and you wore heels? And she was like, I know.
Yeah.
And now we're just much more, not casual, but I would say, you know, work casual.
Yeah.
You know,
dress
casual. I don't know.
I dress more professionally now to work in a school than I ever did when I worked in the field.
Really?
Yeah.
I had recently a new employee start, and she was just so nice and very professional, and I was like, look at her with her court pants.
That's instantly
what I thought.
I know. Anytime I see dress pants, I'm like, oh, man, the court pants.
Court pants.
Court pants. But there's, like, something about... It's this particular type of pants.
It is. And fun fact, I went today to the thrift store. There's one not too far away from here. And they had a little like bin area for like clothes that they marked down to a dollar. Mm-hmm. They had tons of pants and like court pants. And I was like, score. So I bought some court pants.
Yeah. It's one of those, like, I have several pairs of dress pants in my closet, but not all of my dress pants are court pants.
More like church pants.
Yeah. Or like more comfy.
Yeah.
Like if it's got an elastic band, it's not a court pant.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Dang, I love a good elastic band.
Same.
When you have like maternity jeans and, man, you just don't go back, Jack. I mean, once you can just pull them up in one swipe, you don't have to zip anything and button anything.
Yep. It's great. It's a game changer.
It's a Yes. Mom pants are a game changer.
I have several that have an elastic band.
They're amazing.
In the back, like the back is an elastic band. The front is very like neat and professional and cute. So you can do kind of the French tuck where you just tuck in like the front part of your shirt and the back is still out. So it covers the elastic and it's so very classy. Cute, very trendy.
Oh, it is.
So I do that a lot with my elastic pants.
You know, trendy is not the word that comes to mind when I think about my ensembles.
I mean, same. Like, the kids don't make fun of me too bad.
I probably wouldn't make it at school.
No, I mean, it's fine.
I don't ever feel like I dress badly. I always think I look good, nice, but...
I don't understand the fashion of the children these days, though, because they all roll in like, pajama pants.
Mom jeans. And I'm like, what year is this?
Like, athletic wear.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But I had one girl come up to me in tears the other day because her leggings were baggy. And I was like,
the worst thing I've ever heard about in my life.
Okay. Okay. It's going to be all right. And I was like, she's like, do you have any sweatpants? I'm like, no. No, I don't. I said, I've got about 8,000 pairs of jeans back there, though. And we can probably find you a pair.
Yeah.
And we did. It was all okay. She went to first period with sans baggy jeans or baggy leggings.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what to say.
I'd be thrilled if my leggings were baggy.
You'd be like, wow, look how much weight I've lost.
I know. It's a matter of like suction to me. Like,
You know, I do have those days where I will put on something. We're totally off subject.
That's fine. Well, I will put on something. They've already clicked off.
Yeah. I'll put on something and I just don't like it, but I can't really come up with anything else. And I'm like,
whatever.
It just is what it is.
Yep.
And I will just go. And sometimes I feel that way with my hair. Because I try not to wash my hair often.
Mm.
Like it's not a healthy
cut all of mine off. I wash it like twice a week.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. And so leave-in or like the hairspray that you, not hairspray,
dry shampoo.
Dry shampoo, that's a big go-to for me. Where it's like, oh, I'm day five, but you can't tell, you know? So, yeah.
Well, this has been delightful.
Oh my gosh, she found out we're gross, we have no style,
right?
Our leggings are tight as hell.
They are.
We had baked ziti tonight.
We did have baked ziti tonight.
We did. I actually made it from penne pasta because I didn't have ziti, but really tomato, good. Tomato, baked penne.
One more last little off-topic thing, and then we'll tell you how to get in touch with us. Speaking of the leggings, there's apparently this like thing on TikTok, this like trend. Not trend, but like new thing where they're talking about legging legs.
What are legging legs?
Like if you don't, like if you have legs like ours, you know, bigger thighs, our cellulite is on full display. I mean, I'm not sure about yours, but mine is all the time.
Mine is.
That we don't belong in leggings. Like we shouldn't wear leggings because that shows that off. We don't have legging legs.
So, who cares?
Right.
And I will tell you, most of the women out there wearing leggings are moms.
Oh, yeah.
Who have had babies, who are middle-aged, all the things. I guess that I am. They do it all the time. And who gives an F?
Yeah, I think it's mostly, like, obviously geared like towards, young like, people. Younger people. But so, that's sad.
That is ridiculous.
Like, I mean, if I was a teen or tween, I would be like, so am I not allowed to wear leggings now?
I mean, it's just a way to, you know,
make you feel bad about
yourself. Make you feel really crappy. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, you know what? Haley and I, we got the leggin' legs, and we don't give two craps.
They got big old leggin' legs. Leggin' legs. No, I only wear, I don't wear leggings to work, just because, you know.
Well, you can't. I can't. Not really professional.
But I do, like, on work days. Like, teacher work days? Absolutely. When it's only adults in the building?
100%. Only adults.
I'm wearing my leggings. I don't care.
Only adults here.
Alrighty.
All right. Can you tell them how to get in touch with us?
Sure. If you would like, you can send us an email.
Or don't.
And tell us about your legging legs.
Or your court pants.
Or your court pants. at mountainmysteries.appalachian@gmail.com. Find us on our Facebook, Mountain Mysteries, Tales from Appalachia. Find us on Instagram, mountainmysteries.appalachia. And check us out on our Patreon, patreon.com/mountainmysteries.
Indeed, it's a good time.
It is.
whoa. It was like, sorry, y'all. Giving a shout out to Hackettstown, New Jersey.
Hey.
I know. Thank you all for listening.
Thanks, New Jersey.
And we'll plan to see you next week with another exciting tale of the court pants.
Woo.
Until then.
Bye.
Bye.